Well, okay, I'm going to talk about the gauge coupling realization in five-dimensional effective field theory defined on a slice of ADS-5. My talk is largely based on these two papers that appeared in the archive. I'll start with the brief motivation for this study, and then I will discuss the gauge coupling normalization in simpler case, I mean the five-dimensional field theory defined on just flat orbifold. I will summarize known result, and then I will discuss the computation of the coupling normalization in the context of four-dimensional effective supergravity. And then I will jump in the main part of my talk, the gauge coupling normalization in five-dimensional theory on a slice of ADS-5. Again, I'll discuss the approach using based on the four-dimensional effective supergravity, and then I'll present the result for which which can be used for non-supersymmetric case also. Actually, this approach and this calculation are totally independent, but once you apply this more general result to supersymmetric case, then we could get precisely the same result. And then finally, I will discuss some possible application of our results to the gauge coupling unification in these ADS-5 models. Well, in the previous talk, we heard many virtues of having extra dimensions. Independently whether this extra dimension gives some virtues or is harmful, in any case, this extra dimension is essential ingredient of string or M theory. And also for the last several years, we learned that the extra dimension can provide some new insight on the scale hierarchy problems. And also since mid-80s, we know that the extra dimension provides new way to break gauge symmetry, for instance, but this is also revived quite recently. And also extra dimension can provide new way to introduce some accidental or approximate global symmetries, which may be useful, for instance, for the flavor problems. The model, the extra dimension model that I will focus in my talk is the so-called RS1 model, Randall-Sundrum 1 model, which is a five-dimensional effective field theory defined on a slice of ADS-5 with this type of metric. In order to make this metric configuration as a solution of equation motion, you need to introduce a brain at each fixed point of your orbifold. So UV brain at y equals 0 and IR brain at y equals 5. With this, four-dimensional massless graviton is localized on the UV brain, as you can see, for instance, from the wall factors. So the corresponding Planck scale is essentially of order the five-dimensional Planck scale. On the other hand, in this model, the standard model fields are assumed to be confined on the IR brain, so that the natural mass scale is exponentially suppressed compared to this five-dimensional Planck scale by exponentially small wall factors. So by assuming that this is about the order of TeV, which is close to weak scale, you can naturally get the large hierarchy between the weak scale and Planck scale. On the other hand, there is one drawback of this scenario related with the gauge coupling unification. Phenomenologically, we know that at the weak scale, the standard model gauge couplings are deeper by order 1. But if the standard model gauge fields are confined on IR brain, and then this MIR, which is essentially order of TeV, is the cutoff scale of physics on IR brain, which can be described within this five-dimensional theory, within the RS1 models. So the correction to gauge couplings, which is calculable within the RS1 model, should be at most of this order, so that order of 1 of 8 pi squared. That means that this RS1 model does not provide any insight on why the standard model gauge couplings at the weak scale are so different. But it has been pointed out by several people here that the situation becomes a lot better if you modify the model. For instance, if you assume that the standard model gauge fields not confined on IR brain, but propagate in full five-dimensional bulk. In this case, it has been noted that the correction to gauge couplings calculable within RS1 model is enhanced by this large local factor, as in the case of conventional grand unified theory in four dimensions. But, unfortunately, all of those previous work are either incomplete or because it has been done for simple toy models like Scala QED in five dimensions, or you know, some results are highly mixed, terribly mixed with the highly regulated scheme-dependent corrections, which cannot be determined unambiguously within five-dimensional effective field theory. So the goal of our study was to make a complete calculation of scheme-independent corrections, which are unambiguously calculable in five-dimensional effective field theory. And our result, of course, will be useful for the study of gauge coupling unification in ADS5 theory. So this is the basic motivation for this study. Okay. Now, let me discuss the gauge coupling normalization in a simple case. I mean, the five-dimensional effective field theory defined on a flat orbifold with this metric, flat metric. Now, the model is assumed to contain five-dimensional vector fields, also five-dimensional fermions, five-dimensional scalar fields with these kinetic terms. And also, generically, you can have the kinetic terms of five-dimensional gauge field localized at the fixed point. For instance, if you start from action without this fixed point kinetic terms of bulk gauge field, generically, you encounter some logarithmic divergence of this term so that eventually you have to introduce the pair couplings for the kinetic terms localized at the fixed point. Anyway, you can impose this type of orbifolding boundary conditions for your five-dimensional fields. So eta is the sort of G2-parity eigenvalues. Omega is this represents the twist with respect to 2-pi shift of extra dimension coordinate. And for the Dirac fermions, orbifolding, and for real scalars, this kind of orbifolding. Of course, you can consider the simple case that all these orbifolding eigenvalues just plus minus 1. The quantity that I'm interested in all of my talk is the so-called one-particle irreducible two-point amplitude of zero-mode gauge fields, which is constant along the extra dimensions, y-independent. So in momentum space, the 1-pi action contains this two-point amplitude with coefficient, which is basically the so-called 1-pi gauge coupling of this. Oh, yes. This model, because of this orbifold boundary condition, you have a well-defined mass scale given by the red and compact scale, 1 over R. So that... of course. Basically the same as similar to the Kalachuk line.
Is 1 over R, is that the large R, in other words, the orbital compactification is of anti-considered space, the main space itself, or are you doing an orbital compactification by chopping out the little rolled up space?
Sorry?
1 over R.
1 over R, yes.
A big R or a little R?
Little R. Little, little R, okay. In my mind. But, of course, formally, I'm discussing the theory with arbitrary value of R, but if I wish to apply this kind of model's phenomenology, then basically I'm thinking little R. But here, just, I'm considering gauge coupling normalization for arbitrary value of R for a while. Okay, basically, I'm going to compute the sum of these vacuum polarization diagrams for the external gauge field zero mode, sum over the all Kalachuk line mode. Of course, for whenever I do some field theory calculations, what I have to do is just identify the UV divergence structures of the amplitude. Well, it's very simple to see that the actually. You can have just from a simple dimensional analysis. You can have a linear divergence in bulk, and also log divergence localized at the fixed point. So, including these divergent corrections, the 1PI couplings can be organized in this way. So this is the contribution from the five-dimensional pair couplings, or more precisely, five-dimensional Wilsonian coupling defined with respect to this card of lambda. And you have the linear divergence term, so Pauli divergence with some coefficient. As you know, that this coefficient is actually the coefficient Pauli divergence highly regulation scheme dependent, because this is basically dominated by the contribution from the UV scale around the cutoff. And you have original Bayer couplings localized at brains. I mean, at the UV brain, at the IR brain, this log divergence. And in addition to that, you have cutoff independent finite threshold corrections, generically depending on external momentums and those orbifold radius. Now, sorry, R. This one? Second part of the possible. Okay, this one?
No,
up.
Yeah. So there's the brain term, the E squared on the brain, it's like an E squared B squared term on the brain. But why could you all have a normal component of the magnetic field on the brain? That's part of the
term. I mean, that's the higher order. In the derivative extensions.
So I'm saying that if you put E squared and B squared parallel to the brain,
yes?
Why can't I have all the E squared for particular
things? E squared. E squared perpendicular? Kaluza-Klein line like A5?
Fifth
component. Oh, okay. Well, okay, maybe the simplest answer, maybe that, I can choose always the gauge that the A5 is zero, for instance. E5 is the E5 is the gradient of A5, something like that.
Yeah,
but I can choose the gauge that A5, fifth component of gauge field, is always zero.
The potential, yeah.
Yeah.
But what about the field?
I mean, this identical zero, so field strength, the field strength associated that A5 should be. Oh, that's zero again. I mean, just a zero, identical zero along the whole space.
I'm just thinking
that is that Jackson, say. Like you put E parallel square, and I can't have a normal field on the surface. This is a boundary, but boundary is above the boundary. Oh, for instance, okay. So this orbifolding boundary condition also makes that, derivative of something is zero, yeah? Because here I'm interested in the gauge field, which has the G2 even, right? So that makes that, for instance, the fields can be non-zero on the fixed point, but each derivative with respect to Y should be zero, for instance, like that.
Does that kill both electric and magnetic fields?
I don't know, but I think this is the most generic counterterms that you can imagine, once you impose the orbifold bounded condition and also the gauge invariance.
Yeah, can you
Okay, anyway, that's not. Okay, sorry. This part is highly regulation scheme dependent, but you know that the basically also Wilsonian coupling, the precise meaning of Wilsonian coupling can be given only when the corresponding regulation scheme is defined. So in that sense, actually, if you change the regulation scheme, then this coefficient can change, but accordingly, the Wilsonian coupling for this redefined, the another regulation scheme should be changed also to make all this combination is scheme independent. So in that sense, this part has nothing to do with this part should be determined by the physics above the cutoff scale. So five-dimensional effect, and this part doesn't have anything to do with the calculable part within five-dimensional effective field theory. But including this and this, actually this part, which includes the conventional momentum learning and also finite KK threshold corrections, these parts are unambiguously calculable within five-dimensional effective field theory. On the other hand, this part corresponds just to bare parameter, right, which is not calculable within five-dimensional field theory. Sorry?
These loop corrections.
Loop corrections, yes. Related corrections, yeah.
Matter field loops?
Yes. And also matter fields and gauge field loops all together. I'm considering more generic theory that, you have a bulk gauge field, bulk fermion, charged fermion, bulk charged scalars. It's generic five-dimensional field theory.
Is it obvious why the boundary theory should remain local?
Boundary theory should
remain local, so you have a well-defined
derivative. I'm not sure whether that question can be answered within this five-dimensional field theory. Maybe more precise answer may need. So what is the UB completion of this five-dimensional field theory? For instance, string theory, or I don't know. But anyway, I'm just interested in the piece which are calculable within five-dimensional effective field theory. Because I don't have any idea what is the UB completion of my five-dimensional field theory. Delta A tilde plus this one. Well, in case that external momentum is far less than the Kaluza-Klein threshold scale, then you know that the at least this momentum dependence should be able to be determined just in the context of four-dimensional effective field theory, which is just, the well-known log P dependence with the conventional one-loop function coefficient. And the additional momentum dependence should be suppressed by the, inverse power of Chi-K scale. But because you have an infinite number of Kaluza-Klein mode, you can have a threshold correction from this orbifold radius dependent Kaluza-Klein threshold corrections of this form. So you can unambiguously calculate the coefficient of this term within the five-dimensional effective field theory. The result is this, done by these guys. So as you can see, basically the omega was represent the twist of your five-dimensional field with respect to the 2-pi shift. So you can see that the all fields without any translation, discrete translation twist, for the fields with omegas 1, contribute to BA prime, give rise to the log divergence, localized at the fixed point. Also, five-dimensional fermions does not give any log divergence because it does not contribute to this coefficient. Anyway, this is the result from explicit calculations. Now, of course, you can consider some particular case with supersymmetry. You can start from some five-dimensional N-Crosson supergravity or five-dimensional supersymmetric theory. Then you know that generically you can have two different type of matter multiplet, the so-called five-dimensional hypermultiplet, including two complex scalars and one Dirac fermions. So just let me assume that this hypermultiplet has the is invariant on the 2-pi shift of extra dimension coordinate. But in order to be consistent with the supersymmetry, this scalar and this scalar should have opposite due to parity. Also, the model, in supersymmetric model, you can have also five-dimensional vector multiples, including the five-dimensional vector fields, real scalar, and K-genos. Again, this is assumed to have omega 1. Also, to be consistent supersymmetry, the vector fields and scalar should have opposite due to parity. Anyway, for this generic kind of supersymmetric, five-dimensional supersymmetric theory, the resulting PA prime is simply given by this, just minus two times the Cashmere of adjoint representations. Now, you can see that actually, if this compaction radius is large enough compared to the cutoff length, given by this cutoff scale of your five-dimensional effective field theory, then actually this, you can have a somewhat large log so that this contribute, these corrections can be important. For instance, these papers pointed out that this radius-dependent threshold correction of this type can be quite important in orbifold Tsujigat models. For instance, you can have this kind of boundary conditions for the gauge couplings in your five-dimensional theory. Then if, again, this complex radius is large enough compared to the cutoff length, then these extra log corrections can be phenomenologically quite important.
So this is this threshold correction, and this term, which proportion to log?
Yes.
But the first term.
This one?
That term is not enhanced by log.
This term? Oh, this is just a conventional four-dimensional law. I mean, for instance, if your momentum is far below the your compacting scale, this can be the dominant log, for instance, right? And also this can be the next dominant log, right?
So does it come from when we integrate out those kk, say, one by one?
Precisely, yes.
Then we get this log.
And also then, you have to isolate this uncalculable Pauli divergent piece into bare couplings and only just, consider this calculable piece of logs. Okay. Actually, the class of theories that I'm interested in is, some higher dimensional effective field theory with hierarchical mass scales. Of course, because this is higher dimensional field theory, it should involve the so-called KK threshold scale, below which the physics should be able to be described by the four-dimensional effective field theory. And above this scale, you can see the extra dimensions. So the physics should be described by the 4th plus n dimensional effective field theory with some cutoff. Of course, the physics above this cutoff, we don't know yet. Maybe it can be some string of M theory, or it can be some deconstructed version. Still, I can introduce some another mass scale, other than this KK scale and cutoff scale, some M in the middle of this. For the momentum external gauge field far below the KK scale, again, the momentum dependence is just determined by four-dimensional effective field theory, just BA times log P and P scale suppressed by the inverse of KK scale. Plus, you have these finite threshold corrections depending on KK scale and some mass in your 4 plus n dimensional effective field theory and also cutoff. It's physical. Okay. More precisely, I should say that this is some mass parameters in your five-dimensional Lagrangian. So all physical mass should be determined, for instance, by these mass parameters, for instance.
Isn't that just lambda?
No, lambda is just cutoff scale of your field theory. This cutoff scale and M is some mass parameters, physical mass parameters in your Lagrangian. Okay.
Do you have a Lagrangian to show us?
Sorry?
Do you have a Lagrangian to show
us? I think I will show later. Okay. Okay. Anyway, suppose that if all those mass scales are close to each other, then we don't have any large scale hierarchies. Then generically, simple dimensional analysis tells us that, because this dimensionless quantity as a function of those dimensionful objects, generically this should be order one because we don't have any large dimensionless scale ratios. But however, if you have some large scale hierarchies between those, scales, then, this delta A prime can be enhanced, so it can be important. The case that I'm interested in is that the large-scale hierarchies or large-scale ratios arise as a consequence of large moduli values, which is the case in this orbifold field theory. For instance, large flat S1 over G2, you have two scales, cutoff scale and KK threshold scale. This is basically it depends on this orbifold radius. So if the orbifold radius is much larger than the cutoff length, then you have large-scale hierarchy. In ADS5 case that I'm mainly interested in, I have some mass parameter which eventually gives the ADS curvature. Okay, I mean this is the mass parameter in the, for instance, five-dimensional cosmological constant term. If you take the this ratio of ADS curvature to Kaluza-Klein threshold scale, then you have these exponentially large ratios. So if K and R is, you know, somewhat larger than the curvature length, then you have, you know, huge hierarchy, scale hierarchies between the ADS curvature and KK threshold scale. So because all those large-scale hierarchies arise as a consequence of some large moduli values, so that means that the dominant part of these corrections, which are associated large-scale ratios, can be determined essentially by computing the radius or generic moduli dependence of gauge couplings. So that's the one base point. Okay. Well, but fortunately, in some special case with unbroken four-dimensional supersymmetry, you have very good result on this moduli dependence of 1PI gauge couplings, which has been discussed Kaprowski and Lewis. Actually, this work is largely based on this Nubikov, Shipman, Weinstein, Zaharov's analysis on globally supersymmetric case. Anyway, you can start from, you can consider four-dimensional effective supergravity with these forms of Wilsonian actions written on superspace. Here, I just ignored the gravity part, just include the matter part. Then you have D terms given by the Kala potential, and F terms, which gives the gauge kinetic terms, for instance, which is defined by holomorphic gauge kinetic functions, and superpotential, which contains some supersymmetric mass and Yuga coupling, so on and so on. So here the T, I mean, you can expand, for instance, this scalar potential in powers of gauge-charged matter fields. So here the T is the some generic gauge single moduli, and phi is some generic gauge-charged matter fields, and chiral superfield. Well, then, Kaprowski and Lewis found the following form of the modulation between the 1PI gauge couplings, moduli-dependent 1PI gauge couplings, and moduli-dependent Wilsonian couplings, like holomorphic gauge functions and the Kala metric of this. One thing that you have to keep in mind is that this is the four-dimensional Planck scale, which basically this is the Planck scale for the four-dimensional metric, which defines the p-scale by these relations. So, for instance, if you choose the different metric frame to measure the p-scales, then the moduli dependence of the Planck scale can be changed. Anyway, this relation you can check through, for instance, through explicit one-loop computation, and also you can use some argument based on superviolet and Kala invariance of four-dimensional supergravity to get this relation between the moduli-dependent 1PI couplings and moduli-dependent Wilsonian couplings. Well, if you use this relation based on the four-dimensional effective supergravity to calculate this moduli-dependent 1PI couplings in this orbifold field theory, then perhaps the only non-trivial thing is to decompose these holomorphic gauge-gate functions into two pieces, the so-called three-level piece, which means that there's three-level in the sense of five-dimensional effective field theory. More precisely, this just represents contribution from the five-dimensional Wilsonian couplings, which may include loop effects from the scales, from physics that scales above five-dimensional cutoff scale. This piece is one loop threshold correction to four-dimensional holomorphic gauge gate function due to some modes which exist between, Kaluza-Klein scale and the cutoff scale of five-dimensional theory. Excuse me.
Just assume that the UV completion of the orbital theory, field theory, has to work.
No, of course, yes. I mean, of course, this entire approach, I assume that you have unbroken four-dimensional endocrine supersymmetry. So that means that you're studying five-dimensional theory should have five-dimensional supersymmetry. Yeah. So, of course. As you can see from here, I mean, if you just try to calculate one loop corrections, then with these relations, what you need is sort of just tree-level result for this scalar metric and the tree-level result for the moduli scalar potential and tree-level result for the holomorphic gauge functions. But here, you need one loop threshold corrections to the holomorphic gauge functions. All right, with this the decomposition, this piece, which I'm interested in, because this is just the only piece that I can calculate in the framework of five-dimensional effective field theory, is given by this. But we already, we already have some more general calculation based on five-dimensional theory without using this kind of four-dimensional supergravity. I mean, this explicit five-dimensional calculation, in case of five-dimensional supergravity, you have this result for delta A. So, I should be able to reproduce this result just based on this relation, using this relation based on four-dimensional effective supergravity. This is sort of simple things. So, let me give a very brief introduction of five-dimensional supergravity. I have gravity multiples, including five-dimensional metric, five-dimensional gravity photons, five-dimensional gravitinos, and I is the SU to R doublet indices. I have a hypermultiplet, including two complex colors and one Dirac fermions. Also, vector multiplet, including the five-dimensional gauge field. So, I'm considering this flat geometry. And actually, it's quite convenient to reorganize this five-dimensional field in n equals 1 superfield notations. I mean, here n equals 1 means that just, number of four-dimensional supersymmetry. So with this, this G mu nu component of five-dimensional metric gives the n equals 1 gravity multiplet. But this G5 5 component and the radion and the pips component gray photon gives a so-called the radion multiplet, radion superfield T. And this V5 is very much like a kind of axion, very much like some Goldstein boson. So I will call this fifth component gray photon as an axion. So they are both J to even, so can give the massless four-dimensional mode. I have two chiral superfield from hypermultiplet, and also two superfield, one vector superfield, four-dimensional vector superfield containing these gauge bosons, and another chiral superfield containing the scalar component of the five-dimensional vector multiplet and the fifth component gauge field. So these are jit odd, jit even, jit odd, jit even, like that. Of course, all the jit even fields can give massless four-dimensional mode. With this, it's almost trivial to find the moduli dependence of the Planck scale, also this scalar potential of moduli like this. Now, still we need the moduli or this orbifold radius dependent part of this one loop threshold correction to the holomorphic gauge gate functions. Well, here the holomorphicity of this threshold correction to gauge gate function gives a severe constraint on possible R dependent delta FA. Because of holomorphicity and supersymmetry also, this radius-dependent corrections to the holomorphic gauge couplings are related with this action-dependent threshold correction to setup parameters. But in five-dimensional theory, we know that there is no non-drift coupling of B5 in five-dimensional supergravity other than the Chern-Simon coupling, which just give these three-level gauge functions. That means that you cannot have any action-dependent threshold correction to setup parameters. That means that you don't have any orbifold radius-dependent threshold correction to the gauge kinetic functions. So, again, we are just interested in this radius-dependent part because that's the origin of these large-scale hierarchies. So that basically determines the dominant part of the corrections. Now we have all the relevant moduli dependence of the object. So just use this and use that you don't have any R-dependent delta FA. You get the result that you have obtained from direct five-dimensional calculations. Okay, this is just a simple exercise. Of course, I'm interested in more non-trivial case with, for the five-dimensional theory on a slice of AEDS 5. So maybe this is one action that I can show. Okay. All right. This is the, again, if I wanted to use the four-dimensional effective supergravity approach, I should consider the five-dimensional supergravity defined on a slice of AEDS 5. Okay, you have this five-dimensional Einstein-Hilbert term, the kinetic terms for the gray photons, and this is the cosmic constant, which gives the, which makes the geometry as AEDS 5. So the kinetic terms for the vector multiplet, kinetic terms for the hypermultiplet. For the hypermultiplet, I can have another three parameters, which describe the kink mass of these fermions. Of course, this scalar also has some CI-dependent mass, both in bulk and brains, which are determined by supersymmetry. Also, generically, I have some interactions localized on brains, localized at a fixed point. Okay, in any case, I can tune the parameters of the model to make that this ADS-5 configuration is the solution of equation motion. Well, one special feature that is very useful for the analysis is that in order for this ADS-5 structure is consistent to supersymmetry, you have to gauge this U1R symmetry of your underlying five-dimensional supergravity. So this is the gauged U1R structures. The corresponding gauge field is the gray photons. So that all the gauge charges are determined essentially by the ADS curvature and also kink mass. So this is the result from supersymmetry, basically. Now with this, you can see that now in ADS5, in ADS limit with non-zero ADS curvature K, B5, the axions, has basically non-derivative couplings to gauge charged fermions, particularly here, so that generically you can have a radius-dependent corrections to the holomorphic gauge gate functions.
Dot, dot, dot
here?
Oh, no.
Here?
The sidebar side and then dot, dot, dot. Is that the nonlinear term that make kink soliton for psi?
No. In a sense, here, this kink mass just introduced by some input parameters. Of course, you can imagine some underlying theory which contains some scalar fields whose profile gives the kink mass. But this here, the dot, 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 means that some CI-dependent mass of scalars and some other general interactions. Yeah. Again, in order to compute this four-dimensional effective supergravity action of this five-dimensional supergravity on AEDS 5, it's again convenient to rewrite these all fields and actions on four-dimensional n equals one superspace. Still, this is five-dimensional actions, but just reorganize all of your fields as n equals one superfield. So already we have seen that you have a radiant superfield and the gauge superfield and some chiral superfield. Both of these come from the five-dimensional vector multiplet, two chiral superfields from the five-dimensional hypermultiplet. To make theory more general, let me introduce generic brain fields. I can have some gauge field just living on UV brains. Also, because I need to have n equals one supersymmetry, of course I have gauginos just living on UV brains. This is totally independent from this. This can propagate in bulk. Also, this can live both on bulk and brains, but this can live only on UV brains. Some chiral matter fields combined on UV brains. Vector superfield combined IR brains, same chiral superfield combined on IR brains. Well, it's then quite straightforward to rewrite all of your five-dimensional superposition in this form. So, for instance, this is the eventually this gives the kinetic terms for the radians and kinetic terms for the HI. I'm hypermultiplied and a bit complicated. And this term for the vector multiplied. This is just a quite straightforward analysis. And also, because I have a generic brain fields also, I have some generic, you know, brain interactions like of this form, just standard four-dimensional, you know, supersymmetric interactions. And one peculiar thing is that, you know, in addition to this, which you can derive just by a simple classical, you know, calculations, in addition to these two terms, you have another terms, which I call as anomaly terms. All these anomaly terms, you know that in five dimensions, no chiral anomaly, so this anomaly term should exist only at the orbifold fixed point of this. Basically, this anomaly term is generated because in order to write your action in n equals 1 superspace, you have to redefine your perimeter fields. The required redefinition is actually depends on this the required redefinition of perimeter actually both depends on orbifold rates R and action component B5. Actually, this anomaly term can be simply determined by considering just the B5 dependent phase transformation of the perimeter, which is necessary to write your action in n equals 1 superspace. So this is the required transformation of perimions. Now then, you know the general rules to calculate anomaly associated with the generic transformation of the five-dimensional perimions and also transformation of the four-dimensional perimions living on brains. So this the result anomaly is simply given by this form, a little bit looks a little bit mess, but actually this is just straightforward. Anyway, of course, the precise form of action depends upon what kind of field basis you use. I mean, if you use a different field basis, the shape of the action can be different, but of course, physics should be independent of your choice of field basis. But the one good point of this particular field of this particular actions, or of this particular field basis which gives this action, is that in this field basis, if you look at these bulk terms, which gives the, for instance, big action interactions with the bulk KK mode, you can see that you don't have any non-derivative interactions of axions, of B5, to the bulk KK mode. So that means that this is nice feature of this particular field basis. So integrating out all massive KK modes does not lead to new additional B5 dependent threshold correction to holomorphic kinetic functions other than those come from these anomaly terms. Like this. This one. Now, you have all the information which is necessary to calculate to determine the radius dependence of 1 pH gauge couplings. So this is the radius dependence of Planck scales, excuse me, and also calorimetrics for the bulk hypermultiplet, which gives the massless four-dimensional general mode, and also the calorimetric of the charged field living on IR brain, also charged calorimetric for the charged matter fields living on UV brain, and three-level holomorphic gauge gate functions, and also the holomorphic gauge gate functions for the gauge field which live only on UV brain or IR brain. Also, I think I missed the T here. Sorry. This is the one correction to holomorphic gauge kinetic functions, which is essentially determined by this anomaly term. With this, this result for the one loop 1PI gauge couplings, just, you know, standard for the gauge couplings, for the gauge field leaving on UV brain. We know that the, for this case, just, you know, you have the four-dimensional description is valid up to, for instance, cutoff scale, which is close to five-digit Planck scale. For the gauge field combined on IR brain, the effective cutoff scale is suppressed by this Mohr factor. This is just, you know, this is to be expected one. For the most interesting, you know, gauge couplings, for the zero mode of bulk gauge field, the result is looks more messy, but anyway, this is the result. So in any case, this calculation is based on four-dimensional effective theory, so that means that this calculation is valid only for the external momentum less than the KK scale of this ADS5 theory, which is given by this. Okay, but this is nice and not very complicated calculations, but unfortunately, this can be valid only for supersymmetric case. So, of course, we are also interested in non-supersymmetric case also. In that case, we need to, I mean, the only thing we can do is just direct calculations in the framework of five-dimensional theory. So basically, we'll use the extended dimensional regularization scheme, you know, developed by this guy. The basic idea is that you replace some over the KK mode by this, you know, some a kind of contour integral. And for the four-dimensional momentums, you use the conventional dimensional regularization. The only non-trivial thing in this regularization is that you have to take into account the effective Mohr factors when you subtract this, you know, one of epsilon divergence in dimensional regularization. The point is that we already noticed that this is log divergence, and we already noticed that all log divergences exist only at the fixed point. For instance, for the fields invariant under this 2-pi shift, you know, the UV divergence equally splitted. And for the minus sign here, you have minus here. Anyway, now we know that effective cutoff, if the effective cutoff here is lambda, which is close to, for instance, to the five-dimensional Planck scale, then the effective cutoff here should be, you know, multiplied by these four factors. So this is the only non-trivial point that you have to take into account. Okay, with this, this is the result for the correction to gauge couplings induced by the five-dimensional real scalar with this orbifold boundary conditions. So if you are just interested in the, you know, external momentums less than the KK scale, then this can be written this way. So, you know, you have this result involves two parameters, A and B, or alpha. You know, A is basically the A and B. A is the sort of a bulk mass of your scalar fields, and B represents the brain mass of the scalar fields. Okay, what is this function here? It's given by here, quite technical things. And this is the result for the contribution from the five-dimensional real scalar with these orbifold boundary conditions, I mean the JIT-ORD scalars, which is still invariant under this 2-pi shift. This is the result. No. This is for ADS case. ADS case, yes. Yeah, of course. K is the ADS curvature here. Of course, this MKK is the TV scale. I mean, of course, if pi KL is large, then the TV scale, yeah. Because
so your result is true for scales smaller than TV.
Yes. Only for the momentums, I mean, external momentum. Yeah. But of course, I mean, this result is valid even when the P is bigger than MKK, this result. But actually, there is another limitation. on the range of P, which can be described in the context of five-dimensional effective field theory on ADS5, which will be discussed a bit later. Well, the same calculation for the five-dimensional Dirac Perlmians with this orbifold boundary conditions. And also the contribution from five-dimensional vector fields with these orbifold boundary conditions. Anyway, now you have the result, which is valid for non-supersymmetric also. Then you can consider, you know, supersymmetric case as a special limit. Then you use all of these results, and then you find that eventually, you know, adding up all of those contributions for supersymmetric case, you precisely get the result that you obtain based on the four-dimensional effective supergravity, I mean this one. So you see, I mean, these two calculations are totally independent approach, but anyway, of course, it should give the same result if you made some mistake. Okay, so far, much of my talk is about some technical stuff. So now let me go to some physics. You know, what would be some possible application of these calculations? Well, perhaps the most interesting possibility is the application to gauge unification in this type of models. Again, you know, I can write these 1PI gauge couplings in two pieces. I mean, this piece. Basically, this is the bare coupling of your five-dimensional theory. So this is the part to be determined by the UV completion of five-dimensional effective field theory at scales above cutoff scale lambda 5D. This is the part. I mean, this is the quantum correction below the cutoff scale of five-dimensional theory, which is unambiguously calculable within five-dimensional effective field theory. Now, suppose that the UV completion of this five-dimensional effective field theory defined on a slice of ADS5, suppose that this UV completion provides some kind of gauge unification, for instance, you know, this kind of SE5-like unification of these pair couplings. Then, of course, then the observed different gauge 1PI gauge couplings at the weak scale, of course, you know, to apply for hierarchy problems, we are not to have orbifold radius, you know, somewhat larger than the curvature length. Anyway, this observed difference in standard model gauge couplings at weak scale can be explained by this piece, which can be unambiguously calculated within five-dimensional effective field theory. Of course, once again, this is possible because, you know, basically, this correction is order of log M Planck over M weak scale. Unlike the case that the original Randall-Sundrum models, in which that the gauge field are confined on IR brain, I mean, in this case, you know, I'm assuming that the gauge field can propagate in bulk. But if the gauge field are confined on the IR brain, as in the case of RS1 model, then the quantum correction.
Just numerically. Okay, but it's numerically 8 pi squared.
Okay, you see, I mean, we know that the these gauge couplings differ by order one at the weak scale.
Yeah.
And you know, they are supposed that, you know, these 5D pair couplings are the same.
Yeah, because but I just don't understand. 8 pi squared is 8.
Huh? 8 pi squared?
Pi squared is 8, 0, right? Pi squared is 10, 8 pi squared is 8.
80, yes.
Low quality of which you
want to... Very rough estimate, okay? Very rough estimate. Just order. I mean, order, right? Numerically, this...
No, but you can't make such estimates in logarithm, because logarithm, if you say logarithm was deeper by a factor of 5, it's not an order of estimate.
Okay, let me then more precise. What is this number? Let's see.
The number of neutrons in the universe is much less than 8 to the power 18.
there is no such a big number, like e to the power of
the right? The agreement is that you have the squares of the mass.
Here, squares. Yes. Okay. Okay. Oh, okay. Okay, but in case that the original Landau-Sandler models, we need the gauge field combined, then we know that the quantum corrections, which is calculable within the original RSM model, is always of order log T B O M V, right? So that you can never explain this gauge coupling difference and the weak scale in the original Landau-Sandler models. But actually, this is not this large log does not simply mean just momentum learning from the weak scale to the M Planck scale or 5-dimensional Planck scale. To see this, let me consider some more generic case, including some higher dimensional operators, higher derivative terms in your 5-dimensional effective actions. So in any case, as long as it's allowed by the symmetry, then you can write it. This is higher derivative terms. With this, if you calculate the resulting 4-dimensional gauge coupling for the gauge field zero mode, of course, you have this piece from this lowest order kinetic terms for the gauge field. But you have extra contribution coming from here. It depends upon momentum because this contains extra derivatives. Now, then you can easily see that. Then generically, we know that if the contribution from higher dimensional operators becomes as important as the contribution from the lower dimensional operator, then generally the effective field theory description breaks down because then you have to include the arbitrary number of higher dimensional operators. So, this predictability and calculability is totally broken. Now, then with this, you can easily see that if the momentum is bigger than this, then the contribution from these higher dimensional operators becomes more important than this. So that means that you can describe the momentum dependence of this one PI gauge coupling of gauge field zero mode only for the momentum range below this. And basically, this is just, if the K pi R is large, and this is just around the TEB scale. Well, actually, this is not surprising at all because the gauge field zero mode is constant along the extra dimension. And also, we know that effective cutoff scale at y, when measured in the 4-dimensional massless graviton, is given by this. So that, because the gauge field zero mode is constant, can see the entire extra dimension, so the effective cutoff scale should be in M5 time, should be suppressed by the exponential factors. So this is the brief summary of the situation. So I can consider some regions spanned by the orbifold radius and external momentum. Maybe you can interpret this external momentum as the temperature of the universe. Is the radius of our orbifold radius of our universe. Then all the domain below this line can be described by the 5-dimensional effective field theory. Actually, maybe you don't like this. Okay, anyway, this is the point which can be tested experimentally. We are assuming that our universe has the large orbifold radius to solve the hierarchy problems. And this energy momentum scale, you can test experimentally. But just by simple momentum learning, we have to stop here. If you wish to describe the physics in the context of 5-dimensional effective field theory, but at the same time, we know that at this scale, where all scales, including the external momentum, radius curvature, and orbifold radius, and 5-dimensional cutoff scale, more or less similar to each other, then we don't have any scale hierarchy. Again, at this point, delta A should be of order 1. That means that at this point, the 1PI couplings is basically same as the bare couplings. So if the underlying UV completion of my pi divisor theory gives the kind of unification to this, that means that this star represents the unification point of gauge couplings. So then, but if you wish to calculate what is the prediction of the unified gauge coupling here, then, for instance, you can run down this particular line, just the conventional momentum learning. But in order to arrive at this point, which can be tested experimentally, in any case, we have to pass this horizontal line, which means that you change the observed radius. So in order to calculate the prediction from unified coupling here to measurable point, to the couplings at measurable point, you need to know this radius dependence of gauge coupling. So this is why my calculation can be useful for the issue of gauge coupling unifications. Okay, time is almost past, so let me summarize. First of all, five-dimensional effective field theory defined on a slice of ADS5 with five-dimensional bulk gauge versions may provide a gauge coupling unification together with a solution to the gauge hierarchy problem. Because again, this is possible because the orbifold radius-dependent renormalization is generically enhanced by these large logs. We computed such corrections, which are unambiguously calculable within five-dimensional effective field theory for generic ADS5 theory, and our result can be useful for studying the gauge coupling unification within the framework of five-dimensional theory on a slice of ADS5. I think I'll stop here.